The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The Revolution with Warren McCartney is brought to you in part by Commonwealth Bank, Bell Monkey Foot Grill, Fidelity Bank, Hershey's Chocolates, Wendy's, the Deposit Insurance Corporation, Burger King, Baja Retreat, and ISL Bahamas Limited, the developers of Swim, the stress-free click-declare software.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name's Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. Before we get started today, I want to let you know that Vel Monkey Foot Grill, the popular pop-up mobile food vendor, has now found its permanent brick-and-mortar home with outdoor dining, located at Four Walls Squash and Social Club, Number 62 Village Road. Visit the Monkey Foot for the new menu reveal. Healthy and comfort street food with sophistication, paired with signature cocktails while enjoying live entertainment. Walk-ins are welcome. You can RSVP at 394-5042, 394-5042. Val Monkey Foot is really solid. I often get some stuff from there. It's not too far away from where I live. I'll take a walk over there. I recommend the doubles. Doubles are really good. Everything else is good, too, although I haven't tried anything. I'm meant to try pizza, but I can't do pizza unless I'm sitting and eating the pizza. Like, I find it pointless to go reheat pizza, especially flatbread pizza. But the Monkey Foot is right there on the old, where the old squash club was. So now it's called the Four Wall Squash and Social Club. They got outdoor dining out there. It's really nice. You should check it out for sure. All right, I got an update for you. I yesterday had told you that I had put in around 9 a.m. my application for the renewal of my driver's license. And I told you there were just one or two little small hiccups, but a guy called me and was really helpful about it and said that I should hear back from road traffic in a couple of days. I got to let you know, I heard back from road traffic yesterday. All right, at 3:24 p.m., road traffic department portal sent me a message saying your renewed driver's license is ready for collection. Please collect your driver's license from the inspector's booth located at Thomas A. Robinson Stadium Monday through Friday between the hours of 9 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. Please bring valid government-issued ID. All right. Online RTD online support team. So kudos to the road traffic department. Kudos to who set this up? Ministry of Finance, setting up the portal to make that service hop. All right. That's what I'm talking about. That's called being effective in government, making sure that you can get something done. So I'm going to go pick up my driver's license here shortly, and we're going to not be riding dirty any longer, right? Now, if you could, Royal Bahamas Police Force, work your stuff out faster, that'd be great. All right. Went to go pick up my gun licenses and big long line. People waiting on the outside even. I'm going to go back today. Hopefully that's cleared up. But it would have been good if I could have done that process online and just went and picked up smoothly. Now, I haven't picked up from road traffic, so I'm hoping that's a smooth process. But in terms of the actual applying for it and getting response back from the road traffic department, it's good. I know you only got a couple of things going on, right? But that's good. You're getting there. Another 20, 30 years will be where Estonia was 10 ago. But keep it up. I like it. I like it a lot. So yesterday I was trying to explain something to you in terms of, I got a couple of things I want to talk. In fact, let me start with what I was going to start with. All right. So yesterday I was trying to explain something to you in terms of to help you understand where I am with a particular thought. All right. So if we look at, well, let me back it up. Often, and I'm only giving you this to understand because I don't want you to think that I'm the type of person who consumes this type of stuff on a regular basis. But if you do, then that's on you. But I just want it for the record that I don't. All right. So it says, so one, that means the government upgrades to RTF is definitely a major plus for the country. But you know, Anton is going to lie and say the PLP had this idea on the table. That's fine. You can have an idea on the table. I mean, executing the idea is ultimately what really matters. But that's fine. You can have an idea on the table. But who executed it is what matters. And so this government has executed a trial system that appears to work very smoothly and swiftly. It is not fully launched throughout the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. I have not completed the last step of the process, but I'll give the government kudos. If you want me to give Minis kudos, great job, Minis, for your coding expertise and dealing with the portal yourself, and we all know it wasn't your idea, but if you want to give him credit for it, then I'll give him credit for it. Great job, Minis. Great, great, great job with the renewal of the driver's license process, all right? So there's no need to diminish anyone just because you don't like their politics if they actually do a good thing, all right? Every person who you do believe sucks is still capable of doing good things, all right? Now, let me back up. Usually when I go to bed, I will have left the television on. Well, usually when I get ready to go to bed, kids are going to sleep. You know, wife finally is like, I'm, you know, tired. I can't hang. And the TV will be on Nickelodeon by the time the kids are going to bed, which is trash, by the way. But, you know, and got a little too much LGBT going on there for me, but, you know, I'm not judging. I'm just saying. I try to monitor, you know what I'm saying, how much of it. I got no problem with the LGBT, I'm just saying. Right? But anyway, and it's not trash because of that. It's just trash overall. But anyway, there's a lot of trash on TV. I'll turn it to, like, Netflix or something where I'm watching something interesting, like Korean Pork Belly Rhapsody or something educational like this. And I'll get tired. I'll be like, I'm going to go to bed. I go to bed. I wake up in the morning. Since school is open, my wife will wake up before me. It used to be when we were doing virtual school. That didn't start till like closer to 9. So, and you don't need to do anything for the kids except, you know, they get changed. Well, my kids change themselves. You know, brush their hair, whatever, like this. And now that school's open, she will get up way before me because she does all the stuff to get them ready for school. I didn't ask her to do all that stuff herself, but she does because that's what she wants to do. And I will come out, and they'll be doing their thing, getting ready and everything. And so on the television, I am going somewhere here with this, just so you know it's not me. So on the television will be Good Morning America, right? Which I would only assume my wife has turned it to because my children aren't going to turn it to Good Morning America, right? And Good Morning America is even more trash than Nickelodeon. So sorry, ABC News. I know you got some good stuff going on over there with George Stephanopoulos and David Muir and all this stuff, but it's garbage. Good Morning America. Good Morning America is frivolous, mind-numbing trash. I like the people, Robin Roberts, TJ Holmes, Michael Strahan. I can tell you I know all their names now. That's how often it's on. But it's all trash, right? So it's the thrust of Good Morning America is to report seriously on tweets from JoJo Siwa, right? So JoJo Siwa is 17 now and has decided she's gay and has a girlfriend, and it's a huge segment on Good Morning America, right? Garbage. Yes? All right? So, and they do it every day, the most frivolous, dumbest entertainment nonsense, and it's the number one rated morning show on the planet, right? English-speaking in any event, right? So it goes to show you it's garbage because you all like garbage, at least the Americans, for certain. After Good Morning America, which I believe is 6 hours long, right? And I'm getting somewhere, so I didn't choose to put on Good Morning America. After Good Morning America, I believe, because usually I'll come back by the time I'm finished working out, or I don't remember the timeline, there's a show called The View, all right? Now, if Nickelodeon's trash and Good Morning America's even more trash, The View is garbage juice, right? So I don't know why y'all gave Whoopi Goldberg a show, right? I quite enjoyed her performance as Celie in The Color Purple, as well as many others, Ghost, Jumpin' Jack Flash, right? Very nice, very good as an actress, yes, very nice, all right? In terms of, do I want Whoopi Goldberg's advice and instructions on how to live henceforth? No thanks, right? And the other people who come on with her, they're also out to lunch. Here's the scary part. There's a show that I'm get back to The View. There's a show that comes on after The View. I think it's called The Talk, right? I don't know. I'm sitting here, right, and I do this every day, and I watch these people on TV, and these people are millionaires, and I'm here trying to figure out how I'm going to pay RBC Finco every month. You know what I mean? It's just, the world's just not a fair place, is it? Like, the most vapid, clueless, not because they're women, because there's plenty of dumb men out there too, but it's worse than The View. So it's progressively worse. It's Nickelodeon's bad. Good Morning America's bad. The View's complete train wreck garbage juice. And The Talk is just not fit to be on television. And it's a bad representation of women, in my opinion. Anyway, Whoopi Goldberg's on there talking. And they're talking with Dr. Anthony Fauci, right? And he talks about the vaccine and where they're going and what they want to do with herd immunity, because Fauci had said at one point, we can do herd immunity at about 60%, and then he's like at about 80%, then about 85%. So, you know, Fauci kind of moved the dial. I guess he didn't want to scare too many people. Either that or A, that or B, he didn't know what he's talking about. But, you know, he's a doctor. He's Fauci. People cuss him, but he knows his stuff. All right, so and afterward, the host of The View, Whoopi Goldberg, I guess she's in charge of The View, which, again, I'm astounded. Please, someone from America, come let me do a television show. I swear to you, I will do a better job than all of the hosts of The View and The Talk combined. And if you gave me the $100 million budget, you give Good Morning America, I could probably make that pop better, too. But Whoopi Goldberg, after she's talking to Fauci, she says, well, even if we reach herd immunity, life's not going back to normal. Everybody's just going to have to get used to it. And we're not going to have gatherings. And we're not going to be able to be packed at these games and go out and all this other stuff like that. And so a couple of questions raised to mind. First, who cares what you think, Whoopi Goldberg, right? You're that's easy for you to say. You're rich, right? You're rich and you're old. You live your life, right? You did all the cocaine. You had fun. You were in The Color Purple and all this. You're set. You could stay home in your mansion and have people come and clean it for you and deliver you food and cook for you and bring you whatever you want. The rest of the world has to get back to some sort of normalcy, not because we want to go to parties and go to red carpet galas and smile up in celebrities' faces in your big fancy studio, but because we got to go make a living for our families. You had your heyday. So the point is this, aside from The View being garbage, what is the point of achieving herd immunity if you have to still do all this stupid stuff that we're doing now? And I say it's stupid. Yeah, it's stupid. Right? It's stupid, but some of it's effective. But it's still stupid to me. All right? I don't like doing it. I don't like having to go through it. When they first started talking about the masks, all right, I thought, that sounds pretty ridiculous. They haven't shown anything to show masks have been effective. Show me some data. I'll change my mind. Since then, I've seen data. Masks are effective. Certain types of masks, when used a certain way, I've seen the data. I've changed my mind. Wear the mask for now. It'll help in most situations if you're wearing the proper kind of mask because you showed me data, right? When they first talked about the vaccine, I, A, had doubts about the efficacy of the vaccine. All right. I was not sure that they had properly vetted and tried the vaccine along the normal process. I was shown data that displayed different to me. And therefore, I trust that the vaccine went through the proper rigor that the companies usually would have over an extended period of time. I say that to say we have not studied the long-term effects of the vaccine or the medium-term effects of the vaccine, and that is a concern. You brought me data from your vaccine trials. I studied it to the extent that I, as a layperson, could understand it, and it showed me that it's effective, that it works, not in terms of you don't catch COVID-19, but in terms of it prevents you from getting very sick and dying in the vast majority of cases. So it works. They work. The mRNA one works. The AstraZeneca viral vector one works. I'm not taking that probably until I see the Johnson & Johnson one, but I'm not doubting that they work. And they've worked as they've spread through the population, right? So as we see in a recent study, the AstraZeneca vaccine, I believe it was, I don't have the data in front of me, they say it was 67% effective in reducing transmission of COVID-19. So great. I don't know if your children will be born with three testicles, but clearly the vaccine prompts an immune response, and clearly the data that they have suggests that it could work against the stronger variants. Why the bad one always got to be African is my question. Like, why the scary thing always got to be African? Like the bees. Oh, the killer bees. African killer bees. Because they ain't really scary if they ain't African. Anyway. The vaccine clearly is effective in reducing severe symptoms in COVID-19 and reducing hospitalizations and death. The World Health Organization released yesterday guidance that says those over 65 should take the vaccine if they are compromised. They said pregnant women also. My pregnant woman ain't taking no vaccine, thanks. I'll lock her away in my tower of like Lyanna Stark, right? Where she can go have Jon Snow. Am I spoiling Game of Thrones for you? You haven't caught it these past couple of years? If I'm a pregnant woman, I'm not taking nothing, right? If you can't eat sushi when you're pregnant, I ain't taking your vaccine, buddy. I can tell you that much with my gestating baby. Now, the vaccines are clearly working. As you look at vaccination rates going up in America, the hospitalization rates are going down, all right? I know people who've had the vaccine. They're okay for now. Again, I don't know what's going to happen to you in the future. We'll see. But it's clearly working. You showed me data and so I've changed my view of the vaccines to a certain extent. Just like I've changed my view of masks. I ain't wearing no double mask to protect me from the scary African killer version of the virus, right? I'm going to do what the Chinese do. You dig what I'm saying? When I see the Chinese, they done had everything. They done beat everything. When I see the Chinese start double masking, I'm going to go, okay, let me mask up now. Let me double mask up now. So these things are working. So look, Whoopi Goldberg, I'm sure I'll never meet you. Maybe you're a cool person. Your show is trash. But we're not going to get herd immunity and just keep living like hermits and weirdos and staying away from each other for the rest of eternity because we fear there's going to be some sort of huge mutation of the virus that's going to, again, take over the world. We're trying to get back to business. That's all this is about. This isn't about have a vaccine for herd immunity for fun. It's to get back to where we were. All right? Or more people will die through lack of getting other vaccines. You hear the Ministry of Health coming on shows begging people to come get vaccinated because not for COVID-19, for regular vaccines that over time have shown drastically reduce sickness and death. So you keep this up, you're going to have people dying, more people dying in the long term because of all the other effects. So we're looking to get herd immunity. And if I'm going to, I wanted to play for you one day the thing from Dr. Charlisa Gibson up there in New York. And she explains herd immunity. I've explained it, but you all think that I wake up in the morning and shoot heroin and just talk out of my head so no one listens to me. But herd immunity simply means, and Renward Wells has explained it, although I don't know that we listen to him in terms of being a medical scientist, although he's an engineer. Herd immunity simply means that you have enough people who are immune to it where the remainder of the herd who is susceptible are protected. All right? And there are different ways to reach that. You could reach it by just letting it run wild, which they seem to have tried in the States for a minute. And you can get it by vaccination. All right? So we're trying to get enough people vaccinated to where we get the herd immunity, not so we can keep living closed off where our kids can't go to school, Whoopi Goldberg, who I'm sure kids went to Ivy League schools, not so that we can not have family gatherings and celebrate events in life that make them worth living. We achieve herd immunity so we can go back to normal. That's what we're trying to do. All right? So here's my suggestion. I see that Barbados, during the lockdown, I'll say this from Mia Motley, although I disagree with her whole lockdown tactic, she had a press conference every day. Not a statement where she just looks at you with stone eyes and says some silly story about her relatives, but she had a statement. She had a press conference every day during the lockdown to the point where she's let them know everything that she's doing and what's going on. She didn't want Barbadians to feel like alone in their homes during the lockdown, which, Motley, I don't think your lockdown's necessary, but all right. So Barbados now has gotten 100,000 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine and from India, a gift of the government of India. And now Dominica, they also sent along 70,000 doses for Dominica, right? None for us, right? We have no friends, clearly, in India, although I see Indians walking around here daily. None from China. China. All right, because we don't know any Chinese, although I see them around here all the time. They got a huge embassy. I'm sorry, in my head, if I'm talking about China, I have to talk like Trump. Huge. It's huge. It's on Village Road. It's very nice. So we're going to have to wait on the COVAX alternative. Now, Renwood Wells is buying the big freezers. They're not that expensive, so they tell me. They're more expensive than, like, my home freezer, but they're not millions of dollars worth of freezer. We're probably talking 50, 60 grand worth of freezers. In case we get the mRNA vaccine. So you have your choice. You have your choice of vaccines. Yes, It's kind of like you go to a bar. You have your choice of cocktails. What would you like today, sir? I don't know. I had whiskey yesterday. That seemed to have done the trick. I'll try gin today. So, you know, you got your choice. You got a selection of what you want to get into. All right? Now, one more thing, and I'll do some of your texts here in a moment. The thing we need to look at is the other side of this. So for those of you who are having the conversation, see, right now is pretty stupid stuff, right? So there's no sensible medical reason there's a 10 p.m. curfew. There's no sensible, proper reason if you're using the mask and the science shows that masks and social distancing greatly prevents the transmission, that everybody from Nassau got to get a COVID test to go to the island. There's no sensible medical reason why in-person schooling hasn't resumed, although it's supposed to be. All right? All of it's pretty stupid, but here we are, right? But we're only going through this thing so that we can get to the other side. I'm not going through this crap so that when you vaccinate people, you can go, well, you still better wear your mask. Man, look, the science is showing that with AstraZeneca, not the mRNA, but with the one we're getting, if you give one vaccine, if you give the first dose and then wait 90 days for the second dose, all right, it's more effective than giving it within 4 weeks. So that should give you time to vaccinate a lot of people. I'm not having no baby, so I ain't, you know. I ain't going to be taking nothing if I'm having a baby. I'm so sorry. And I'm probably not going to take the AstraZeneca vaccine. If I see more data before it comes, we'll see. I more than likely would be willing to take the Johnson & Johnson vaccine because of how it was developed. But if the if after 90 days, after 12 weeks, you're taking the second dose, and then they say it's another 4 weeks till it's really humming, then what the hell are we talking about still doing all this stuff beyond the point that we reach herd immunity? Like, we got to be thinking about the other side, right? So all you weirdos out here, I don't know your politics or whatever it is, all you weirdos who want to say, well, things are still going to be like they were after we take the vaccine, then you could shelve that vaccine then. You're making all the wrong arguments for anyone to take that vaccine. I would shut up if I were you about that. I would give a timeline because at least the CDC guys are saying, look, if we get everyone vaccinated by summer, by late fall, we'll see things almost back to where we want to be, is back to normal. Right? So you're making the wrong arguments out here. And I hear some of the same arguments being made here as the stupidity from Whoopi Goldberg, right? I'm sure she's a lovely woman, but her show sucks, and I think she's talking garbage, but that's just me. All right, let's do some text messages, and I got some other things I want to talk about. And you can call us, 323-6232. 323-6232. The talk, man, have you seen it? Like, it's on in the day. Like, and I'm afraid to turn it. You know what I mean? Because I'm not even watching it. I'm hearing it while I'm trying to eat my breakfast. Right? And it's just on. And I'm like, what utter stupidity is this I'm hearing from these people who are qualified at nothing? Right? Most of them. Well, everyone on the talk. Quite a few of them on The View. This says, you can also call us, 323-6232. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4316, and 325-4259, 325-4259. I want to know if I, like, I want to cancel ABC just because of that show. But I know I like ABC News, you know what I mean? So I don't want to. It says, I watch Fox Morning News. Despite them being supportive of Republicans, they're mostly fair and balanced, with both sides defending their points and allowing their viewers to make their own decisions. It's not that Good Morning America's political, you know, like that. It's just that it's trash, right? It's complete. It's 90% vapid cotton candy garbage that believes tweets and social media and every antecedent fringe threat that may possibly do something to your children is worth exploring in depth and repeatedly with a cadre of experts because they just got hours to fill. All right. Now, this says, the point is, it wasn't on the table. I must work in the Ministry of Finance. It was just created a year ago. It says, I work in the Ministry of Finance. Oh, you're saying that the PLP never thought about the digitization idea. No, I didn't think they did either. I thought that I just heard it, and they did it. And I'm impressed. Hell, I'm impressed, okay, with what they did with the driver's licenses. And it takes a lot to impress me from government, right? My standard's high. Well, I try to have it be high. We got to take a break? All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to be back. I'll deal with your texts, and I see your phone calls. Stay on the line. We'll take a short break. We'll be back.
Are you ready to break up with your car? Easy Car Sales invites you to fall in love with an electric vehicle. Ditch the gas pump, the expensive mechanics. Feel the freedom, the power. Visit easy242.com and make a date to test drive an electric vehicle today. Get into a better relationship. Find your perfect match at Easy Car Sales and drive electric happily ever after.
Say aloha to something delicious from Burger King Nassau. Introducing the all-new Hawaiian Whopper and Hawaiian Crispy Chicken Sandwiches. Enjoy the classic flame-grilled Whopper or our crispy chicken breast topped with ham, pineapple, smoky barbecue sauce, cheese, and all the fixins. Grab it with both hands and savor the tropical flavor. Whether you choose chicken or flame-grilled beef, you're gonna love it. The Hawaiian Whopper and Hawaiian Chicken Sandwiches are all new and only at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
When King Hatchet was a hammer, customs clearance was a drag. Those numbers and forms left you holding the bag. But today is a new day. There's no need to fear. Start clearing customs digitally with SWIM software. The best customs clearance software by ISL Bahamas Limited. It's easy. Just give SWIM your invoices and it automatically calculates landed fees, assigns tariffs, and transmits accurately to customs in seconds. Now, completing air manifests and cargo calculations in half the time is as fun as a day at the beach. Brokers, importers, shippers, couriers, are you drowning in an ocean of customs clearance mayhem? Relax and dive into SWIM. Call 356-5592 or visit islbahamas.com to start saving time and money with SWIM, the stress-free click-to-clear software.
Just keep swimming, just keep swimming, just keep swimming, swimming, swimming. What do? We swim, swim, swim.
Rejuvenate, refresh, treat yourself. Immerse yourself in total comfort. Pamper yourself. After all, you're worth it. Relax. Rid yourself of all life's stresses. At Baja Retreat Anti-Aging Spa, you will find everything you need to enhance your body and spirit. Call today at 323-6711 and begin your journey to serenity at Baja Retreat Anti-Aging Spa.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
We'll be right back.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to the Revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. Thanks so much for joining us. I really didn't know we took that much time talking about that, because I do have some other stuff I need to talk about today, particularly House and Mutri and what went down the House yesterday. But and we also have on the other side, we have the Small Business Development Center for a few minutes on the other side after the news break. But let's do some phone calls, and we'll do these quickly, all right? Let's do some quick phone calls, not long-winded, because I got a lot of text, too, and we don't have much time before the break. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Revolution. Good afternoon. Hello. Nope. Okay, let's move on. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Revolution.
Hey, Juan, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm good. How's it going?
Everything good. You remember the CDC-sponsored study? I think it was maybe September, October. That suggested 70% of the people who caught COVID-19 mostly or always wore a mask.
Yeah, I remember that. But they've had different data since then.
Yeah, basically the data hasn't changed much though.
No, they did. I went over it one day on the show. They conducted tandem studies around the globe about mask wearing. I believe it was China, Brazil, a few other countries, and they showed that when people wear them properly and practice the social distancing with them, it does tend to lower the transmission.
But it still brings me to the question, are we just getting a false sense of security? Because do you have any friends who work body work, cop body work, or carpenters?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you ever seen them wear a surgical mask or a cloth mask when they spray painting or sanding with an arbor sander?
No, they're not going to do that. They wear the dust mask, yeah.
And the COVID-19 viruses, or even the aerosol from a cough or sneeze, is a lot smaller than dust particles.
Right.
And the spray particles.
Okay. Yeah.
So how effective are these masks considering you can actually breathe in sawdust?
Mm-hmm.
Wearing those masks or those cloth things.
Right. No, I'm not saying...
You don't think you could breathe in the virus also?
Yeah, I hear you. And we don't need to have a relitigate the thing about masks. But the point is that they've shown to help. They've been shown to have helped. I don't know what to tell you after that. The studies have shown... So if you bring me data and the data bores it out, and I change my view of it. At first, I didn't think it was any help at all. They've brought me data. The more data I see on it, the more I see that they have helped to reduce the transmission.
Well, what I found out is the more you question or you dissent from the popular view, you tend to be blocked and cut off.
Yeah, that happens too.
That happens a lot.
Right. Not true, but sometimes, think about it, maybe sometimes the popular view is the correct view.
You know, not in this case.
You just don't believe in the mass.
No, I don't think, compared to N95 that I know is effective, cloth masks and surgical masks are not effective.
I don't think the cloth masks are effective at all. What I've read is that the surgical masks are effective, but at least not half as effective as the N95 and the KN95. That is why they should stop the limiting of them coming in. But I got to go, but thank you. One more call and then I'm dealing with my text messages. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Revolution. Hello, good afternoon. Nope, all right, let's go to text. Yeah. It says, Juan, I kid you not, I was trying to sell the idea of collecting your driver's license 20 years ago. They never believed in the idea that a Bahamian could do it. I tried many times, but they never went with the proposal, the idea. All right. It says, I don't let my daughter watch Nickelodeon or Cartoon Network or any of those kids' network channels. It's all YouTube that I've approved of until she's of the age to choose for herself. Like, some of it I'll let slide. You know what I mean? Like, what's the show called? Loud House? Where the little kid, Lincoln, he's got two dads. You know what I mean? My son was like, how can you have two dads? I was like, you can't in the Bahamas. So he's like, why not? I said, because it's illegal and we don't believe in it. Okay? My wife was like, you cool, boy. I was like, did I lie to him or what? This says, you are correct, Juan. Good Morning America is trash. Let's promote whatever Disney's pushing. New Marvel movie, Disney crap, whatever they want to push is the second headline. By the way, have you watched Marvel Luke Cage on Netflix? I have. Hope that isn't on Disney Plus. Used a lot of the N-word, decent series, but was a bit surprised. There's one I totally agree with you about The View. She always wants to talk about race and gender, and Joy has nothing positive to say about anybody. I got to tell you, people must love it. It's on TV. It's on. It's like up there, right after Good Morning America. like trash upon trash upon trash. Like it gets like worse as the time goes by. And that's not to knock the host of Good Morning America. I know you guys don't produce this stuff. Whoever's producing it, they're trash. One, you would do a better job than the View host, etc., but you'd never last because people like salacious, vapid garbage. Reality television exposed this long time. There you go, you're probably right. It says, Rapunzel? What? It says, don't forget The Real, another garbage show. I haven't seen that one. This says, as an American residing in New York, I can't thank you enough for your assessment of Good Morning America, The View, and The Talk. Just the best laugh. If you really want to torture yourself, try The Real. Please rescue us and get on a U.S. show. I haven't seen The Real. I'm ready, America. I'm ready. Come, let's do this. If you, I promise you, just give me 3 months. Ain't even gotta be no. I don't even need a year. Just give me 3 months in their slot. I'll start off with half what they get, and if I do a better job, then you pay me. Did you see the Tampa Bay parade for the Bucks? It was thousands. Why can they do that but still no family gatherings or couples going to the doctor together? Yeah, it's all weird to me. It says, did you see the story of the woman who was given the COVID vaccine instead of a birth control shot? She subsequently became pregnant, and the baby was born retarded with utter complications. She won a $10 million lawsuit. That sounds like you're straight making that up. I won't lie to you. That doesn't sound real at all. No, I didn't see that story. This says, one question for you. That's a lot of questions now. I ain't got time to read. There's 20-something questions here. If I get vaccinated, can I stop wearing a mask? No. Can they reopen restaurants, etc., and everyone work normally? No. Will I be resistant to COVID? Maybe, but we don't know exactly. It probably won't stop you getting it. At least I won't be contagious to others anymore. No. You can still pass it on, possibly. Nobody knows. If we vaccinate all children, will school resume normally? No. If I'm vaccinated, can I stop social distancing? No. If I'm vaccinated, can I stop disinfecting my hands? No. If I vaccinate myself and my grandfather, can we hug each other? No. Will cinemas, theaters, and stadiums be reopened thanks to the vaccine? No, exactly. Exactly. I get it. It's you're pushing the wrong narrative because I sure ain't going to get on board. Then don't vaccinate people then if it ain't going to get back to normal. If it's still, you know what I mean? If what you say we're doing now is protecting people, then what's the point of vaccinating people and continuing to do what we're doing now other than making billions of dollars in profits for drug companies? Talk to me with sense now. If what we're doing now, if we follow the proper protocols and it works now, but yet you take the vaccine and you still have to do this, then why take the vaccine? You see how bad the arguments are you're making? This is, I'm sorry to say, but American women love to watch that garbage. Gotta be. Says her show is 100% unproductive garbage. Says, one, you got that kind of service because they know who you are. Set up a random person to apply, then maybe we might be impressed. You aren't a regular citizen. I'm just saying. Y'all ain't gonna give him no credit, eh? They turned it around in less than a day. Give him some credit. It says, my brother, I'm just happy that we don't have the PLP government in while dealing with this pandemic. Liking the lockdown curfew or not, we all know their ways. One, I also believe that had Minnis listened to all the confused double-tongued suggestions from Braving the PLP, we'd be far worse, in a far worse state regarding COVID. I don't know, man. I think if Minnis had listened to some other people, we'd be in a far better state regarding COVID. And we wouldn't have taken so long to get through the second wave. Since he clout chasing. Good afternoon, Juan. Most of the police still don't know how to talk to the people they're sworn to protect. How come they're on? How they come on and being belligerent and disrespectful causes the public not to respect them. Yeah, true enough. This says, Juan, the big question is, does the vaccine keep you from getting the virus? The answer is no. Have you noticed that our numbers are down without taking a vaccine? I have noticed that, but I'm not telling you don't take the vaccine. If your doctor tells you you should take the vaccine, take the vaccine. What I'm saying is, this narrative of, well, we're going to take the vaccine, but all the stuff's going to stay the same, is nonsense, because studies have shown that after 12 weeks of after the first shot of AstraZeneca, it's 87% effective, all right? And if you take the second shot, it's 77% effective, or 67% effective. You take the second shot, it's up to 87% effective. Because the trials they did were at a shorter period of time. Say, Dr. Fauci's out to poison the world. Well, maybe. That texter who said Fox's balance has to be a conservative, that's like saying MSNBC's balance when anyone with a brain knows they lean liberal. One, you're pretty balanced, but like all talk show hosts, you have biases, and the bigger one is accusing everyone who might agree with the PM sometimes as caping for him. Now, that's weird. I mean, I'll do be caping for him, I mean. Says, when you have Leslie Miller on your show, I'd like to ask him why wouldn't he join the DNA? Perhaps one day he'll become their leader. Unless the DNA has someone well-known with experience, there's no hope for them. It says, okay. One, I could show data with evidence on masks that shows the mask only effective against those with COVID-19 is the N95 mask. Oh, you could send me that data. I'm going to look at it. It says, Juan, you're now officially Wells Jr., Minister of Health. Okay. No, I give them no credit, Juan, none. All right, no credit. It says, hi, what website did you go on to renew your license in the process? Thanks. I'm going to have that for you on the other side. I have it, but I just... This says, Juan, I used the new driver's license portal also, and it was very efficient. Kudos to the Bahamas government. All right, we got to go to a break. We'll be back on the other side with the Small Business Development Center for a few minutes, and then we'll continue our conversations. Stay tuned.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas. This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, Bahamas. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. We're hoping to be joined here via Zoom with the Small Business Development Center in a few minutes so we can get an update on what's going on. They got the third tranche, I believe, of the business assistance thing going on. And we want to get some updates on what else is happening as well. Until then, we can continue our conversation. I don't want to start on Mutri if we're going to break in the middle of it to deal with the Small Business Development Center. So let's just go to the phone lines, 323-6232, 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. The text line is 422-4796. I was just questioning previously the entire narrative of the vaccination. If nothing goes back to normal, I don't get it. I don't understand what any of these people are talking about. Do we have the Zoom call or do we have the phone call? We got Zoom. We got both. We'll do Zoom since these are our guests who have graciously asked to come on the show. Good afternoon. Welcome. Davinia Grant. Jesus, is it Grant still or am I going to get in trouble here? Davinia Grant?
Good afternoon. This is Nicholas Higgs. Wrong name in there.
Nicholas Higgs. And
yeah, Davinia will be coming in right now as well.
Okay. And Davinia's Grant still. Right. Yeah. Davinia's Grant now. She was Blair, right?
Correct.
All right. Correct. I got you. We're all set. Are you ready to go, Nicholas, or do we want to wait on Davinia?
I think let's wait on Davinia. Let's wait on her.
All right. So Nicholas is going to hold on for us. And we're going to, in the meantime, go to our phone lines while we wait for Davinia to join the Zoom call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Good afternoon. I'm Rodney.
I'm okay.
I guess I have to hear your volume is low while you wait for your guest.
Okay, go ahead.
Volume is very low. Did you see the thing that came over social media the other day with the... I think it was either Cape Canaveral or Cape Kennedy. They sent it off a test missile.
Yeah, I did see that.
Apparently the trail of the missile was glowing over the Bahamian skies, and a lot of Bahamians saw it.
Right, yes.
Did you see it?
I didn't see it. I saw videos of it.
Oh, yeah. I was watching it come over WhatsApp, and I think it was Facebook WhatsApp. And then I was listening to the comments of what some of the people were saying. To me, I really couldn't figure out why would they be saying things. The first thing that came to their mind was, look at the white people over the Bahamas spraying COVID over to kill the black people. Mr. McCarthy, I said to myself, who would come up with a thought like that, right, knowing the amount of foreigners, billionaires and millionaires, roaming through the Bahama Islands on yachts, in hotels, living in life and key, and on private islands.
But kill us to do what? To do what?
The white man got an aircraft over the Bahamas spraying COVID.
People be drunk late at night.
To kill the black
sometimes.
People.
You gotta forgive them.
What would put that in your mind?
Oh, no. Liquor, you know.
You know?
Hard
okay.
drugs. All right. Okay, white people, sure. They're spraying COVID over the Bahamas. No, that's... good afternoon, welcome to the revolution. Hello, good afternoon, welcome.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, what's happening?
I'm glad to hear your voice along with you.
Hey, man.
Man, I love hearing you talk about your children over the years. They are very much impressive.
No, thank you.
Do well with them, man, you know?
I'm trying.
That's all I want to say to you. And the other thing is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thank God that they are Ackland's blood.
Yeah, they got that Ackland's blood. Yeah.
Thank you, buddy.
All right. They got that Tarpon Bay blood, too. All right, we've got the Small Business Development Center back on. Okay, we're here with Davinia Grant, the Executive Director of the Small Business Development Center, and Nicholas Higgs, the Deputy Director of the Access Accelerator.
Hello.
Small Business Development Center. Hi there, Davinia. Welcome back to the revolution, you and Nicholas. It's so good to have you here. Now, if you could, please give us an update on the latest that's going on with the Small Business Development Center. I don't need to tell you there's a great deal of need still out there for businesses to hold on as we're trying to wrestle our way through the pandemic. So what's the latest that's going on with the Small Business Development Center?
Well, I think between the last time we spoke and now, you know, so much is happening with the Access Accelerator. you know, our main focus has always been to help small businesses to grow, to develop, and in many cases to establish. But right now, we're also just trying to focus on recovery. And so you find that in this aspect of recovery, startups is a very interesting aspect to the recovery process. I'm very, and Nicholas, I'm sure you support this. I'm very proud of the entrepreneurial spirit going on right now in the Bahamas. I think it's something that we all really should celebrate, that, you know, the overwhelming response to what's going on is to be creative, to start something that you may have been waiting to do all along. You have very little to lose, actually, in this environment. It's really something that you want to push to achieve some goals for a lot of people that they've been wanting to for quite some time. And the numbers are showing it. You know, we have our mainstream program, which you would have been most familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
We're still getting persons approved at credit committee on a regular basis and being referred to financial institutions for the guaranteed loans. So I'm happy that, you know, that's still going on throughout the program. We're still processing Hurricane Dorian support at similar levels to the past. So that support is going to continue through the rest of this fiscal year and likely the following fiscal year as well. And then, you know, we have any number of COVID responses that are going on. The business continuity loan that you were most familiar with the last time we spoke, that restarted for some of the smaller operations. And so persons are still being able to access that facility. And then in addition to all of that, we've now started several standalone grants.
Okay.
So the standalone grants has attracted a lot of attention. They're up to $5,000 throughout the country. I think, Nicholas, you could let me know. I think it's about 10 or 11 islands, you know, have already attracted funding in the first and second
right.
rounds. We expect even more so in this third round. And this is where you're seeing a lot of innovation. This is where you're seeing persons who may have had an existing business, but in a lot of cases, there are lots of people with dormant business license, or they're getting brand new business license. As a matter of fact, you know, I probably need to, you know, give our friends at Department of Inland Revenue a call to see if they're okay, because every time we launch a standalone grant round, there's like herds of persons going to either get new business licenses, and at this time of the year, everybody is renewing. And so I'm hoping that we have a very good push toward very compliant businesses, because the compliance is mandatory for access to the grant. So we're pretty excited about what the organization is able to facilitate, and it's amazing what the government is trying to do, and we're doing our best to support it. So that's pretty much an update in a nutshell.
I gotcha. So let me ask you this. If you could ballpark for me the number of businesses and the amount of loans you've helped to guarantee thus far, outside of what I'm talking with just startups and launching the entrepreneurial side, on that side of it, the number of business and the amount of money that you've been able to guarantee, help those businesses guarantee so far.
Well,
Nicholas. Yeah, the guaranteed loans that have actually been disbursed are about $11 million.
Mm, right.
The approvals are a little bit more than that, because there's always a lag between, you know, when something is approved and when it's disbursed. So $11 million would be between our mainstream program and the disaster relief program. There's been about $11 million. Now, obviously, that doesn't include the business continuity loans, which were not guaranteed loans. They were just straight loans from the government through the SBDC to the business community.
Right. I want to ask you about
but
that.
Yeah, we've done
but I wanted
a substantial amount of guaranteed loans.
Right. I wanted to segment those. So of the 11 million, how many businesses would you say that represents?
Nick, you have that more handy than I do?
You could ballpark
it. I'm trying to pull it up right now.
That's fine. All right. Well, while Nick's looking for that, Davinia,
I might be able to pull it up. Go ahead.
Well, next, looking for that, tell me about the business continuity program. How much money has been funneled through you to help these with business continuity, and how many businesses would that represent?
Okay, I'm going to answer that right now, but I just saw the number.
That's fine. Let's circle back to the first one. So 11 million?
Just under 500. Yeah, 11 million represents about 470 loans under that 11 million.
470 loans. Now, on average...
go ahead.
On average, how many jobs would you say that would have created? Like, per business, how many jobs would you say they create average on average?
Okay, I'm definitely going to need Nicholas to research that while I answer the other question that you had.
All right, no problem. We can go back and forth.
Going to your business continuity question, can you repeat that again, please?
Yeah, I want to know how much money has been dispersed through, in terms of the grants plus the loans, through your program for business continuity. How much money and how many businesses that represents?
Okay, as of end of January, it was just under 42 million.
Wow.
And about 6 million of that would have been grants.
$6 million.
And then the balance of it would be loans. So it's significant. I don't know.
That's massive.
I mean,
did you expect that? Did you?
Unprecedented. I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think you'll be surprised. You know, the not just the quantity of businesses, but which businesses.
Right.
And so there were a number of people that really needed assistance and were very grateful for it, and they've already started repaying. So even in this depressed economy, I think people have shown their appreciation for the shot in the arm, and have been faithful with proactively, you know, seeking out their respective financial institutions to make sure, you know, they're okay with when their first repayment dates are, and some people have started paying off in full already. So we're very proud of the level of gratitude people have shown by starting a faithful process for the repayment.
That's awesome, because I was going to ask you about repayment. But before I ask my next question, how many businesses would you say the $42 million represents?
Off the top of my head, it was somewhere over 500.
Really?
I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it's not north of 600. Yeah, for business continuity.
Business continuity, if I'm correct, the last time I checked, it was about 574. Persons that would.
Yeah, that sounds right.
500. And so you, Nick, would probably have a better idea of this. So how many jobs are we talking when we talk business continuity? Because they would have to actually give you data on their employees, right?
Absolutely. That figure was over 4,000. At the 41 million point, that was over 4,000.
So you've helped to keep 4,000 people getting paid. Excellent.
Absolutely.
Now, in terms of the 470 loans for the Access Accelerator, Nicholas, how many employees would you say that, how many new jobs would that have generated? Let me put it that way.
For the microloan program you're asking about?
Yes.
So that's an interesting number. The thing I wouldn't even say off the top of my head. I'd say average about 2 to 3 persons. Because see, it's interesting because the microloan is so vast, and I wish I could have gave you the specific number now, because some of the businesses some of them are large, some of them are small, and so to actually say the number, I wish I had the number right now.
I understand. Understood.
Our first annual report includes our economic impact report. The second annual report, the audit is 99% done. The text is ready to go. So within the next couple of weeks, we will publish the second annual report. And each annual report has these types of economic impact numbers. And that specific employee number for the mainstream program, we will be able to give you. But as it stands, no, unfortunately, I don't have the employee number. But our most of our clients, like Nicholas mentioned, are actually small businesses. Mm-hmm. And as a result, you're talking about anywhere between 0 to 5 on average. They're, you know, some of them that are 5 to 20 and very few are between 20 and like 30 or 35. Our maximum is 50. So in many cases, you're talking about businesses that may have 1 plus 3, 1 plus 4. Mm-hmm. And so if you're talking about 500-600 people served times on average 3 to 4 persons, that's really what you're looking at in terms of the employee the employees supported by the program.
Okay, now you've only been operating about a few years now. You've been operating about 3 years now, and there's the old adage that at least 20% of new businesses, they fail in the first couple of years, and then I think it goes up to 50% in the first 5 years or something like this. Have you guys, what do you look at in terms of, well, firstly, do you look at it in terms of failure rate, or do you look at it in terms of success rate? And could you say, what is the success rate or failure rate of businesses that have been funded through the Small Business Development Center?
So with that, I think, Davinia, you should give a more macro approach, and then I'll go the more micro approach to that question.
Do we still have Davinia on the line? Yep, we lost Davinia.
Forgive me, I was muted. Okay. So the success or failure rate, I want to first make sure we have an appreciation that you have quite a number of companies that, one, were affected by Dorian, two, affected by COVID. And while we tend to think that only Abaco and Grand Bahama were economically affected, they were definitely physically and emotionally and economically affected, but other companies in the Bahamas, because of what happened in those two economies, it had some level of contraction for quite a number of other companies, right? And then right on top of that, right on the back of that, you have COVID. That said, I think from our relationship with our clients, the lion's share of clients have been able to remain in business, have been able to reopen once, you know, lockdowns have changed. I mean, the environment with the lockdowns is very different now. And we're seeing a resurgence of activity in their businesses. And so for me, being able to survive those shocks is definitely something that I would call a shock. It's definitely something that I would call a success.
Okay.
Now,
gotcha.
For them, they may be feeling that, okay, you know, I had a hit. My revenue is much lower than before. They may be feeling that that's some level of failure. But I think survival right now is the initial game. By end of year, early next year, that's when you're really looking at trying to push for substantial expansion. But for now, we're really just encouraging clients to be as frugal as possible, as creative as possible, and push to remain in good standing with all of their obligations while meeting their personal needs through their business.
Right. Like, I would agree with you, before I let you hop on, Nicholas, I would agree with you that in this environment, survival equals success, right? So you're going to have companies that go, well, profit to me is success, but to me, survival in this environment equals a success. And once we emerge from this environment, we could calculate it a different way. But as long as you are still ticking, right, to the extent that you're still bringing revenue in, you still can meet certain obligations, I would consider that success. But by all means, Nicholas, if you have any numbers to that effect.
So originally, the SBDC had most of our advisors were focused on the pre-funding stage. This is where persons were being developed. These ideas were their concepts, and they weren't to the funding stage. We've now, because of COVID and Hurricane Dorian, you've seen a larger shift of our advisors now on the post-funding, the persons who've already received funding. So this, to your point of survival, is the success rate. That's what we're looking on as well. So now we have all of our advisors all just pushing through with clients, sitting down with them. What's your cost basis like? Hey, what is your opportunities? How can we maintain you for the next 3 to 6 months? How can we spread bills? So the SBDC's vision has gone from just your conceptual base and as a portion
So now we're heavily focused on the survival and maintenance of these small businesses during post-hurricane and post-COVID. So we're on the same page.
Excellent. But no particular number in terms of a rate?
No.
Again, there was a survey done as a part of economic impact assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And so the minute we launched that, the second year's annual report, which does include partial data relevant to COVID, we will be able to give you numbers, specific numbers. There was a question in there that said, hey, did you have to close down as a result of COVID? Was it temporary or was it permanent? And that number will be released in that annual report.
Okay, fair enough. Now, before you go, I'm going to break out the lotion here for you, Davinia, and you can spread it around liberally if you want. But I've been most impressed, even though everything's not been. I have received some complaints that they didn't quite get where they needed to get with the Small Business Development Center. I've been most impressed that you have not only been able to successfully launch in what you did, but you were so able to successfully pivot when COVID-19 struck. And on top of that, your mandate was so broadly expanded so quickly, and you were able to, in my eyes, successfully accommodate that additional mandate. And it really speaks to your skill and your leadership. And like I say, you feel free to spread that lotion around among your team members who I don't know out there who may have been a part of that success, but I deem it a success. And now, is there anything else you want to tell me about the SBDC?
Listen, the first thing I have to say is thank you on behalf of the team. You know, we have people who sometimes we have to try and force them not to be working around the clock, you know, from our PR team to the grants team, to the funding team, the advising team, the operations team, the customer service team. And so 9-to-5 is a concept that is rarely upheld in the SBDC. And so I really have to spread that very thin across everybody because it's definitely a team effort.
Absolutely. Now, the only last thing
we would say, sorry, go ahead.
Well, before I say what the last thing is you want to say, I want you to tell people how they can get in touch with you, how they can get some help for business continuity, how they can become the Access Accelerator program as well.
Okay, so the major thing that you need to do, the only thing you need to do, because this is a totally e-program, we need you to go online at accessaccelerator.org. If you're looking for a specific program, there's a tab at the top of the webpage that says funding. When you click on that, there's going to be a drop down of options. And you should actually take the time to review each of the options, because while you may be looking to get a grant, if you're under 30, if you're between 18 and 30, you may decide, you know what, rather than going after the standalone grant, I'm going to go after the youth program. Or you may be, again, looking for the grant, but you're really looking for a new laptop to take your business digital, or a new e-commerce platform or some level of technology. So rather than trying to get the standalone grant, you may decide, you know what, I'm going to go after the technology grant. Or, again, you may be thinking about trying to get the standalone grant, but you're in the fishing and farming business, and you actually need much more than $5,000. You have the opportunity to get up to $50,000 in that grant. So you need to search for that grant instead. So there are different funding programs, whether debt, loan, or equity, or across different genres of funding. You should look through that, read each of them carefully, check out all of the guidelines and requirements and deadlines. Folks, we are at a place where deadlines are important because, you know, people are waiting for funding, and we have tight rolling deadlines with many programs. So we have to, we can't continue to, you know, extend deadlines for individuals. So please study the deadlines, stick it up on your fridge so that you're not trying to submit something at the last minute.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Davinia.
And then just our phone numbers real quick.
One, yes, please.
If
yes.
You need to reach us by phone, 359-0626, 359-2394, or our email address, helpdesk@sbdcbahamas.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much both for coming on. You gave us some great information, and I hope that you can help even more people, okay? You guys take care out there and stay safe, both of you.
Enjoy it.
Thanks, Juan. All the best.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. All right. That was Davinia Grant, the executive director of the Small Business Development Center, and Nicholas Higgs, the deputy director of the Access Accelerator program at the Small Business Development Center. You want to Google them, try to see what help you can get. The help is out there for you. You got to try, be diligent for it. So try the best you can do. So accessaccelerator.org is a good way to get information on that. All right. Now, here's the thing. I want to switch gears here. There's two things that are of deep concern to me. And I'll get, well, one's not of deep concern, but one's demonstrable of total hypocrisy. But one is of deep concern. And I probably will shelve the one of very deep concern, which is to do with voter registration, until tomorrow, where I can ventilate it a little more fully. But I want you to know that it's what I heard yesterday, given the environment that we're in, gives me cause for deep concern. So I listened to the Parliamentary Registration Department's press conference, and I also went back and looked at the Parliamentary Elections Act amendments, and I'm presented with a level of concern. Not because of any lack of expertise that was displayed. Lovato Duncanson, the acting parliamentary commissioner, he acquitted himself well in being communicative and explaining different processes. They have hired Charles Albury, who took over for Sherlyn Hall after, well, I think we recall how that went. And they've also hired Errol Bethell, who really has set the standard for how a parliamentary commissioner should operate. But I do note there were some things of deep concern that arose out of that press conference, but I don't know that I'll have time to ventilate them fully today. All right, let's talk Moutrie, right? And I meant to talk Moutrie the other day. It's no secret. I don't think Elsa Moutrie is a good speaker. And that's because he just hasn't made it a habit to protect the opposition, particularly an opposition that's so small in a house that's so dominated by government members. And, you know, and it's the PLP's fault they got that such a small opposition. But it still is the speaker's role to try to protect them. The speaker's role is also to facilitate debate, and the speaker hasn't done a very good job of that. You hear people who are so loud. Among them, I must call your names, Darren Henfield. We can hear you barking through almost everybody's presentation. You have nothing to offer except noise. We want to hear these people, even though you may not think that they are worthy of hearing if they're in opposition or opposed to a particular point that you're making. You're far too comfortable in your seat in the House of Assembly. You're in North Abaco. I would tighten it up if I were you. It's not looking great for you. All right? There are others as well who need to do better in the House. But that's kind of an example of what I'm saying. Like, people just now feel the need to make noise, and when Brave Davis is sitting there, they want to shout and run out and da-da-da, and Brave Davis should do a little better with not doing so much himself, but he's not much of a shouter, you know, and the opposition members who do it, they could behave themselves as well, because it's really a disservice to debate. But all of this stems from Moutrie and his speakership, and I noticed that now he's trying to be a bit better, maybe because we've talked about them so badly, or I've talked about you very badly. By and large, most of you, you go to the House and you're wasting our time. Now, yesterday, let's talk a couple of things. Let's talk Moutrie and let's talk what happened yesterday. So two things of note happened in the House yesterday. The first thing is that, yet again, the government has prevented the opposition from having a day where they can ask government ministers questions. All right? It flies in the face of accountability. And I know what you're going to say, all right? And here's my answer. You're going to say that, well, one, during the last Christie administration, they never had a day for the F&M opposition to ask questions. Not once. The Christie administration blocked it every single time. Didn't allow them any day, as is laid out in the rules of the House of Assembly, to have the second Wednesday of the month set out for question time by the opposition, right? Well, question time for anyone, really, but it would be the opposition members who would mainly want to take advantage of it. So they've continually blocked them from doing that It is the absolute opposite of accountability and governance that opposition members are not allowed to ask questions. And what I'm looking at is, why don't you want them to ask questions? Is it that you don't have the answers? Is it that you don't respect the people of the Bahamas enough to answer the questions that their representatives are asking of you? Or is it that you have something to hide? These are fair questions, all right? So I think it's shameful that the FNM has not allowed the PLP to have question day, all right? Now, to those who say, well, the PLP did it too, I'm saying, but the PLP's behavior was rejected at the polls, and we expected better. Not the same. If we wanted the same, well, let me help you. I didn't vote for y'all, FNM. But if you wanted the same, then you would have kept the PLP there. The PLP was to be chastised, was to be cast out into the political wilderness until it understood that it needed to heal, much like Monique Pinling, who may be being punished for that whole thing, told them at their last convention. We don't expect you to do the same arrogance, the same disregard, the same blitheness, right? So that's one thing that happened. The second thing that happened is that, and I'm going to explain something to you while I explain this, after I finish saying this, is that House and Mutri, yesterday, as Speaker of the House, set aside the ruling of former House Speaker Kendall Major from 2015 that took away all the teeth and real power from the Public Accounts Committee. Now, you may be asking yourself, so what? So what, Kendall Major said, hey man, Public Accounts Committee can no longer, here's how ridiculous what Kendall Major did was, and I like Kendall Major, right? But if you do ridiculousness, you do ridiculousness, you know? I like me too, but I've done some dumb things, and I own it, you know what I mean? So Kendall Major, so the Public Accounts Committee is mandated, okay, to exist. It's not something that a member calls for, right? It has to be there. It's like the Committee of Privilege, etc. It is mandated. You have to have one in the House of Assembly. The Parliament has to have it. It's among the first committees the Speaker, it may be the first committee that the Speaker would appoint members to. And always, 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 the chair of the committee is to be from the opposition if there's opposition in the House, right? Always. The Public Accounts Committee is the most powerful committee of Parliament. The Public Accounts Committee can call for papers, persons, it can hold hearings, it can discipline people, hold people in contempt and everything. On its own, without the permission of Parliament, it can investigate any issue it wishes. Kendall Major took all that away. The PLP took all that away from the Public Accounts Committee, all right? And said unless they had the majority consent of the House, they could investigate an issue that wasn't tabled by the Auditor General. Unless they had the majority consent of the House from, and this is Major's ruling, which was horribly flawed. Unless they had the majority consent of the House, they couldn't hold people in contempt and tell people they were in violation of the summons and all this stuff like that. So he took the power of the Public Accounts Committee and surrendered it to the majority of the House. It was a miscarriage of justice. And I'm getting somewhere. House and Mutri yesterday, after 4 years almost of sitting in that chair, after having previously said that he was not minded to reverse Major's ruling unless the opposition made an effective case to him, without any effective case from the opposition, reversed Major's ruling. Why can House and Mutri do that? Because House and Mutri is the Speaker of the House of Assembly. And this informs us as to why, because I've gotten in some debates with some people about the removal of the Speaker. Someone I know whom I respect greatly said that the removal of the Speaker was possible through unanimous consent of the House. I disagree. I don't see that in law. Someone I know and respect greatly, Maurice Tynes, he wrote to the newspaper and said the removal of the Speaker is possible if Parliament were to be prorogued and reconvened, and then a new session would ensue, and therefore they could bring a new motion of no confidence against the Speaker. I disagree with Maurice Tynes in that that would remove the Speaker, respectfully, because nothing in a motion of no confidence compels the speaker to resign if that motion passes. It is only on the concept of honorability and what the convention of the Westminster system is. In the convention, you go, these people don't want me, I'm going to resign, right? That's convention. Convention is not law. The reason it's difficult to move the Speaker of the House of Assembly, the reason, and it may have been unwise, but the reason behind they did it, understand what your law says and understand where your law comes from, right? It's not from any system that we all thought would work best for us that we made from scratch. It's informed by English common law, right? And in their system, if there's no confidence in the speaker who's an honorable gentleman who went to Oxford and all this, he goes, well, old chap, you don't want me here. I'm going to put forth my resignation because that's the honorable thing to do. That's the conventional thing that honorable men do. However, convention means nothing to men and women without honor. It is only through the force of law that you get results with people like that. Now, I'm not saying Moutry's not honorable. I'm just saying if you move a no-confidence motion in him, he ain't got to resign. He'll take you to court. You'd see Moutry don't be checking. And he's a lawyer now. Has he said to you, if you prorogue Parliament and move a no-confidence motion, I will then resign? Maybe. But that is why it's so difficult to move the Speaker. The Speaker's the judge of Parliament. So let's look at it. Why are certain positions very difficult to move around and certain positions easy to get rid of? We spoke the other day. I see a call coming, but I'm making a point. So if you can hold, do that for me. We spoke the other day about Carolita Bethel, who was then on the Supreme Court, but has now been moved, right? We spoke about Carolita Bethel's judgment of a man who robbed, raped, and murdered a pregnant woman, and not necessarily in that order. Okay? So he was guilty. There's no question. His DNA was under the woman's fingernails, which suggested she fought him off at some point, perhaps at the point that he was raping this pregnant woman, right? I went through the law meticulously with you that outlines that what this man did to this woman constitutes the worst of the worst in our system. A man who, by the way, had previously been released for a sex crime after having served a sentence for a sex crime. My argument was Carolita Bethel should have sentenced this man to death. And that's heavy, but that was my argument, right? If you're looking at it from my point of view. If I'm prime minister, and I'm Juan McCartney, I'm prime minister, and I hold a similar view, and I go, well, what's Carolita Bethel doing? Because I don't like Carolita Bethel's judgment doesn't mean I can just go move Carolita Bethel. Because then the justice system would become a mockery. It would become something where I could move people around however I want, and only appoint judges who I believe agree with me and remove the judges who I don't believe agree with me. Now, I do think the FNM has elevated lots of judges who were connected to the FNM, elevated lots of lawyers who were connected to the FNM to the bench. The PLP should have done so and had the opportunity to do so, but maybe they're more interested in private practice, right? I ain't asking you, I'm telling you, right? Michael Barnett, Brian Marie, these people. So you can't have a parliament that's supposed to be separate from the executive if the executive can come in parliament and remove the speaker just because he doesn't rule the way the executive likes. So in relation to House and Moutry being correct that, yes, I should be independent from the executive. The executive should not be able to manipulate parliament by having an oversized cabinet or denying certain financial things that the parliament needs because, right? Oh, someone's saying the PLP also did so. Well, it was looking like the PLP did it last in the FNMs, but you cannot just have a parliament where the prime minister goes, I don't like how you're ruling, let's move him. All right? If you're incompetent, which one could make that argument about House and Moutry, that's a different story you can seek to remove. But not just because you don't like the ruling. So that the prime minister doesn't like the ruling that House and Moutry gave yesterday, which is good sense by Moutry after 4 years, mind you, but good sense nonetheless, doesn't mean he just gets to go in there, well, I don't like the Moutry, let the Public Accounts Committee have some more power, so let's move Moutry. You see, it shouldn't work like that. That's the first thing. The second thing is, House and Moutry, it shouldn't have taken you no 4 years, no resignation from the FNM to understand that what Kendall Major did was an affront to good governance, and that you need a healthy, strong opposition in order to investigate the people's business and how public accounts are being spent. It's more embarrassing that you did it now than your failure to do it before, in my estimation. Because you knew better this whole time. And you stalled because the government didn't want you to be able to investigate it. So let's look at the Public Accounts Committee. Wouldn't you like to know? It says he can be moved for incompetence, but you said he can't be moved. No. I said you could seek to. I could understand you seeking to want to try to move him for being incompetent. All right? I'm not saying you'll be successful. But I'm saying I don't understand you wanting to seek to move him because he rules in a way that you don't feel comfortable with. Because as Parliament was constructed, he was put there to be balanced. All right? And to use his good judgment for the benefit of the entire House so that the Parliament remains some sort of independent entity from total control of the executive. All right? So seeking to move him for his judgments is a problem. All right? And that's why it's so difficult to move him. Seeking to move him because he's incompetent, I would test that one with the court if I had to. You understand? If he's going crazy, then I'm going to have that one tested. So that's what I'm saying. But I find it strange, I want to say, as kindly as possible, that Moutry now, as a general election, clearly looms, because I just saw a minister's campaign ad last night. As a general election clearly looms, that now you want to unshackle the Public Accounts Committee. Wouldn't you have wanted to know what went down with the Oban deal? The Public Accounts Committee could have done that for you. Wouldn't you have wanted to know what went down with BPL's board? Public Accounts Committee could have done that for you. This text says, have we ever put a non-party in government person in speakership? No, we haven't. Now, that speaks to convention, too. And this is debatable. I'm not saying I'm the end-all, be-all authority on that. That speaks to convention, too. In other parliaments, the speaker gets elected, he goes, I resign from the party because I want to be seen to be independent. I'm going to keep the seat, but I'm going to resign from the party. I want to be seen to be independent. And there are other times you'll have an election. If you have a good speaker, the people go, well, we won't contest that seat. Let the speaker keep it or whatever like this. Right? But we've never had a non-party speaker in the Parliament of the Bahamas. All right? But being a part of a political party doesn't mean that you should surrender control of the parliament completely to the executive. All right? So that's the point I wanted to make, that the speaker is there in order to be fair, in order to protect the opposition, in order to make sure the parliament is conducted well. It is clear that the government sets the agenda. However, to me, Moutry's move with the Public Accounts Committee is too little, too late. Sorry, I talked this whole time. You guys can jump in. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Yeah, good afternoon, Juan. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, buddy?
I'm fine, thank you.
All right.
I caught the last end of your show yesterday before you interviewed Simon Porter. Wasn't able to call because you didn't have enough
time. We're running out of time here, Anton. Out of time right now. You should go ahead.
Okay. What I wanted to add to what you were saying, I want to make a point about House and Moutry, and then the SBDC, right? With the House and Moutry, as you stated, just now, which I agree with everything. I said it the same thing this morning. What it also is an indictment is the fact that the government stated they were about accountability and transparency. They had four years to remove the reins that withheld the Public Accounts Committee from successfully performing its duties, and it did not. And as a matter of fact, what the further indictment is, it took Carlson Moultrie not only making public statements, but resigning from the party in order to feel free to be able to release the Public Accounts Committee to perform its duties effectively on behalf of the Bahamian people. Now, getting to the grant discussion, what I'm concerned with, I thought the interview was a fair one, but in order for the Bahamian people to really assess fairly and objectively what's happening with the SBDC, we need to understand if the SBDC conducted a comprehensive study of the needs of the business community during Dorian, during COVID, and what they will require post-Dorian and post-COVID. If they conducted a study of the capital financing as well as overdraft facility requirements that the business community may not be able to access through normal means, and what the findings were. And then we could compare what the government is offering and determine if the government is being effective and how effective in measuring what the government is doing. And so right now, all it is just a bunch of information passing over, but nothing to gauge or measure it against. And one.
Yeah, I'm going to stop you there, Anton. I don't think that what you're saying makes any logical sense at all. They asked to come on here, but I didn't have the SBDC on and ask them what kind of coffee they have in the office, okay? I asked them to give numbers. So if you want numbers and you didn't catch them, and we're running out of time here, and I do have a lot of text that I won't be able to get to. That's why I wanted to get to Moultrie earlier, because it's a debatable point, and I encourage fulsome, intelligent debate, right? That's how you get sharper. So, first of all, Anton, for your edification, I asked them specifics, okay? So 470 businesses were started through $11 million in loans, study or no study. $42 million has been funneled from the government. Was it enough? Maybe not. Did it go fast enough? Maybe not. But it went. $42 million, of which $6 million in grants, was funneled through the SBDC, and people are already repaying. That's 574 businesses and 4,000 jobs. You know, again, I came on this program at the beginning, and I said, government did a good job with the driver's license renewal effort, all right? Do I support Hubert Minnis as prime minister? I do not. Do I believe that this is a good thing that happened under Hubert Minnis as prime minister? Absolutely, I do. And to whatever credit he gets for being prime minister while it happened, I'm more than happy to give that to him. I think we should stop this thing where we just pick apart, without sense, developments that are good, that are productive, just because we don't like who the development happened under. All right? So there's lots of stuff negative I could say about the last Christie administration, but there are good things that happened during the last Christie administration. I'm not going to throw them all away because we're not supportive of Christie. All right? The website for you to go to renew your driver's license, I'm going to go try pick it up right now, and my gun licenses, is mypilotservices.gov.bs. mypilotservices.gov.bs. It says Alvin Brennan was independent. No, Alvin Brennan was he was not there post-independence. So if we're looking at since the Bahamas became a nation, the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, no, it's always been a political person. And since Brennan, certainly not. Okay. This says, Juan, please keep in mind, Halley ain't no dummy. He hails from Managua and a graduate of GHS, so keep your thoughts in order, because I ended SAC. I went to SAC. There were no McCartneys in that school. I could take the bait. I'm not going to take the bait. Nope, not going to take the bait. You want a SAC. Congratulations. Congratulations. This is I was charged double for my license. Now, I'm checking on that, too. I don't know if that's something that happened here. I got to check on that. All right? This says, Juan, don't let them distract you, please. I want to hear your point. Okay. And also, what, you didn't vote for the FNM? I always thought you supported the FNM. So I'm surprised, Mr. McCartney, but keep up the great job. Your show's always interesting. Is it because I'm light-skinned? You think I support the FNM? What is it? Buddy, anyway, we can talk about that one day. But the fact that I didn't vote for you doesn't mean that I don't acknowledge that you're the government. So don't take nothing away from you. Period. I didn't vote for the PLP. So if you want to do your process of elimination, by all means, go ahead. We got to go. I'm sorry. I'm taking up Lang's time again. Stay tuned. Shavargo Lang's up next with Z-Live Off the Record. Have a great day, Bahamas.
King Hatchet was a hammer, customs clearance was a drag. Those numbers and forms left you holding the bag. But today is a new day, there's no need to fear. Start clearing customs digitally with SWIM software. The best customs clearance software by ISL Bahamas Limited. It's easy. Just give SWIM your invoices and it automatically calculates landed fees, assigns tariffs, and transmits accurately to customs in seconds. Now, completing air manifests and cargo calculations in half the time is as fun as a day at the beach. Brokers, importers, shippers, couriers, are you drowning in an ocean of customs clearance mayhem? Relax and dive into SWIM. Call 356-5592 or visit islbahamas.com to start saving time and money with SWIM, the stress-free click-to-clear software.
Just keep swimming, just keep swimming, just keep swimming, swimming, swimming. What do? We swim, 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 swim.